This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The United States and Britain are teaming up with Australia to develop a nuclear-powered submarine fleet. U.S. President Joe Biden and Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson stressed that these nuclear-powered submarines will not carry nuclear weapons. The leaders of the three countries announced the new trilateral security partnership will focus on the Indo-Pacific region. The new partnership will allow the three countries to share information and expertise more easily in key technological areas such as artificial intelligence. Although none of the three leaders mentioned China in their remarks on Wednesday, analysts see this as another move by Western allies to push back on Beijing's rise in the military and technology arenas. China's Navy has a fleet of 60 submarines, which includes six nuclear-powered attack submarines. Gold medal-winning gymnast Simone Biles and some of her teammates called out the FBI and others over sexual abuse by the USA Gymnastic team doctor Larry Nassar. The FBI acknowledged missteps in allowing Nassar to remain free for months, even after his abuse was reported in 2015. At a Senate hearing and a news conference, Jessica Howard and Ali Raisman said the FBI failed them. There are about 120 people who would not have been victims had one FBI agent made a proper report or phone call. FBI Chief Chris Wray says some agents did not, and he's pledging changes. Biles said the FBI turned a blind eye in this time for a clear message. If you allow a predator to harm children, the consequences will be swift and severe. For more news, please join us on our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. China tightened lockdowns and increased orders for mass testing in cities along its coast Wednesday. Amid the latest surge in COVID-19 cases, the National Health Commission on Wednesday said an additional 50 cases had been diagnosed in various parts of Fujian, most of them in the Putian region, since the start of the pandemic, first detected in late 2019 in the Chinese city of Wuhan. China has imposed strict testing, lockdown, quarantines, and mask-wearing requirements. China has largely stop the spread of the COVID virus, but new outbreaks continue in various parts of the country. The Biden administration began notifying governors and state refugee coordinators across the country Wednesday about how many Afghan evacuees from other parts of the country, the first group, rather, of the nearly 37 arrivals, are slated to be resettled here in the states. California is projected to take more arrivals than any, more than 5,200 people, according to the State Department. And authorities there also said states with historically large number of Afghans who resettled in the U.S. over the last 20 years include California, Maryland, Texas, and Virginia are again welcoming a disproportionate number of evacuees.
In another news, four tourists aboard a SpaceX capsule have started their three-day journey into space. The crew, which consists only of civilians, launched from the Space Center in Florida Wednesday night. The four crew members have spent rigorous preparations, including altitude fitness, emergency drills, classroom work, and medical exams. The commander, Jared Isaacman, who has flight experience, is the person who is financing the trip aboard the mission, which is entitled Inspiration 4. He intends to bring awareness to support for his favorite charity, St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS leaders will meet again today, Thursday, on the military takeover in Guinea.
I foresee the situation where they will say they should release unconditionally President Alpha Condé, and now up to him to stay in Guinea or to go out of Guinea.
Tanzania's female president appoints the first woman defense minister. We'll examine what's behind the high rate of suicide in Kenya. Today, September 16, is International Identity Day. We'll look at the challenges for Africa. Ghana teams up with other countries on marine pollution, and African leaders discuss ways to minimize the impact of climate change.
Our first obligation for African countries must always be to ensure the well-being of our people through access to development services, including electricity, healthcare, education, safe jobs, and a safe environment.
And Uganda takes precaution against meningitis outbreak in neighboring DRC. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Regional Bloc Economic Community of West African States is expected to meet again today, Thursday, on the military takeover in Guinea. A Reuters news agency report quotes Ghanaian Foreign Minister Shirley Ayorko Bachwe as saying that the leaders will first hear from the delegation sent to Guinea last week and then decide on how to put pressure on the coup makers to return Guinea to constitutional rule. Meanwhile, the military junta continued Wednesday its consultation with Guineans about putting together a transitional process. The junta met Wednesday with members of the Guinean diaspora as well as elders and religious leaders. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahima Khan says among the likely demands ECOWAS might make is the unconditional release of President Alpha Condé.
I think at least two important issues will be discussed. One is the current situation of the former president, because I think both ECOWAS and the UN have now accepted the idea that he's no longer the president. But the question is, will he be free, as himself has requested, or will he resign, as demanded by the junta? So I think ECOWAS went to see him, talked to him. ECOWAS knows now what he's requesting. And ECOWAS know the position of the junta now. They may come and decide on what needs to be done. And I foresee the situation where they will say they should release unconditionally President Alpha Condé, and now up to him to stay in Guinea or to go out of Guinea. But I don't know what will be now the response of the junta, because even today, we heard that the junta is now of the view that he needs to have a position which was in line with ECOWAS norms and principles.
The Ghanaian foreign minister was quoted in an article as saying that ECOWAS will consider how it could put pressure on the military junta to return Guinea to constitutional rule. Considering that the junta has been meeting with a cross-section of Guineans, do you think the word pressure is the right solution?
Well, it depends on what we understand by pressure. I think what, if I understand well, what the minister is saying, is that we need to hear from the junta what is the roadmap. Because up to now, the junta has not moved in explaining what they are going to do. The only thing that they've done now is just to say we are listening to people. And after that, even they ask people after the meeting to send proposal. They didn't put any time frame on what they are doing so far. So I think it's really important for ECOWAS to know what is the time frame. Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? As proposed by many participants to the meeting organized by the junta. And we need to know what will be done during that period. Is it a new constitution, a referendum? What are the other aspects of the transition? All that needs to be known. And I think that's what the pressure means, to force the junta to outline the different steps to be taken until the end of the transition.
Some Guineans that we have spoken with seem to be concerned about this pressure, because they say if you pressure the military junta and they come out with something that does not solve the problem, there could be further problems along the line.
It's true that lesson needs to be learned from the other experiences that we had in West Africa after the different coup from Guinea-Bissau, from Mali.
The last time you were on this program, you alluded to the fact that ECOWAS may have to revisit the idea of leaders changing their country's constitution to stay in power. The Ghanaian foreign minister made reference to this when asked by saying that there is a need to amend ECOWAS charter to deal with presidents changing their country's constitutions to stay in power. Your comment?
Yes, that's true, because this is not a new issue within ECOWAS. You know, President Buhari raised the issue 2 years ago during an ECOWAS summit in January 2019, if I'm not mistaken, asking the Commission to prepare a document. This will be the basis for the decision to be made by ECOWAS. Unfortunately, COVID-19 came and they didn't discuss it. But now that openly other countries are supporting Buhari's idea, and now that we know the consequences of the third term in countries, in Guinea-Conakry, more than 200 people lost their lives. There was destruction of everything. And now even the president was the victim of a coup. I think ECOWAS will need to revisit constitutional principles that are in the protocol and to make it clear that people need to respect the constitution. When there is two terms, it's two terms. You cannot change the constitution and grant you another term. And if that is done, I think it will open a new era in the region.
Thank you so much again for your analysis as usual. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Ibrahim Akan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. High-level African officials met virtually this week to discuss the challenges Africa faces in trying to manage a growing population amid climate change. The conference was aimed at identifying ways African governments can manage these pressures to minimize or avoid conflict. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Africa generates about 3% of global greenhouse gas emissions, the lowest of any continent, but it is more vulnerable than any other region in the world since Africans depend so heavily on their natural environment for food, water and medicine. Speaking at a virtual conference Tuesday on climate, conflict and demographics in Africa, Nigerian Vice President Yemi Osinbajo said African governments need to keep the climate in mind as they try to boost their economies.
Our first obligation for us and for African countries must always be to ensure the well-being of our people through access to development services, including electricity, healthcare, education, safe jobs and a safe environment, including access to clean cooking fuels. We must prioritize solutions that align the development and climate agendas, and that is absolutely important.
The Center for Research on the Epidemiology of Disasters, based in Brussels, says that in 2019, Africa recorded 56 extreme weather events compared to 45 in the previous year. The extreme weather patterns affected the lives of 16.6 million people in 29 countries. At least 13 million of them were from five countries: Kenya, Mozambique, Somalia, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe. West Africa had fewer weather-related catastrophes, but is feeling the effects of global warming just the same. Kwaku Ifirie is the Ghana Environment Minister. He explains how climate change has impacted agricultural lands in the country.
The harsh and deteriorating climate conditions in northern Ghana undoubtedly energize the region's growing food insecurity and the seasonal north-to-south migration. And besides, the increasing occurrence of floods and protracted droughts leads to displacement of people. Statistics show that over the last few years, there's been a new internal displacement which has occurred in Ghana due to climate-induced disasters and even beyond our borders.
The UN Special Representative to the African Union, Hanna Teta, says the continent needs to improve cross-border information sharing and cooperation to handle climate-related crises.
The challenge has not been that we haven't yet developed these structures. The challenge has been that we have not utilized them yet effectively. And that goes to issues of national sovereignty, the unwillingness of member states to have others, as it were, take an active interest and maybe recommend things that need to be done in order to respond to particular crises. And if we recognize that we are all in this together, then that certainly has to change.
As for specific suggestions, Osim Bajo suggested governments encourage greater use of natural gas and plant more trees to maintain forests that can soak up carbon dioxide and prevent it from warming the atmosphere. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Tanzania's first female president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, this week named a woman as defense minister, the latest in a number of appointments of women to top government posts. Gender activists have welcomed the move, but say more needs to be done to reduce Tanzania's gender equality gap. Charles Kumbe reports from Dar es Salaam.
The appointment came as part of the second cabinet reshuffle that President Samia Suluhu Hassan has made since the death of her predecessor, John Magufuli, earlier this year. At the inauguration of Tegumena Taxi as Tanzania's first female defense and national service minister, President Hassan said she made the choice to shatter the myth that women cannot serve in such a position.
Nimeamua kuvunja sijui myth sijui tabu ya muda mrefu.
She said, I have decided to break the long-time myth that in the defense ministry, there shall be a man with muscles. The minister's job in that office is not to carry guns or artillery, President Hassan said. Her main duty, Hassan added, is to coordinate and manage the administration of policies at the ministry. Gender activists have welcomed the appointment, but said more needs to be done to address gender equality. Anna Henga heads the Legal and Human Rights Center. Henga says there must be an amendment of laws such as the Marriage Act and the Education Act, laws that put women in law decision positions. She added that the government should also allocate money through the health ministry to educate people that women can also be leaders. Analysts say an increase in the political representation of women at the national level does not automatically lead to women having more power in daily life, especially in highly stratified societies. Sociologist Nasoro Kitunda. Kitunda said, I think this tries to show that there is a direction in gender equality. Though I'm not a believer in gender, the primary criteria, Kitunda added, should be someone's performance and their ability to implement those responsibilities. For Tanzanian human rights activist Aika Peter, appointing more women leaders is positive, but there must be a rotation to allow others to show their leadership skills.
We really need to see new faces when he's in positions.
Peter said, we really need to see new faces in these positions. When you see the same people being recycled every day, it gives the impression there are people who are so good at this job, there are no others who can be good at it. The latest appointment of defense minister brings the number of women who hold ministerial positions in President Hassan's government to 8. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 16. September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and according to the Kenya Ministry of Health, at least 483 people died of suicide in Kenya between March and June this year. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the Kenya Psychiatric Association says the numbers are likely to be much higher because the attempt to commit suicide is criminalized in Kenya.
According to the research, individuals committed suicide due to extreme poverty, lack of access to employment opportunities, and discrimination, as the youngest person to take their life was 9 years old and the oldest 76 years. Lillian Munya's sister committed suicide in 2019 while in school at the age of 17 years with what Lillian says was a mental health illness, a problem that her sister never shared.
Kukufa kwake kulitokana na.
My sister's death was a result on mental illness that she wrote on a note she left behind. The notes were written from the year 2015 to 2018. These notes were expressing her feelings towards my late mother, who died in the year 2015. She said in writing that she was hurt when our mother died. She wanted our late mother to see her join national school, but the mother did not say since she was dead, and that's what made her commit suicide. As a family, her actions really hurt us.
According to Section 226 of the Penal Code, an attempt to suicide in Kenya is a crime which can lead to imprisonment of up to 1 year. The president of the Kenya Psychiatric Association, Dr. Chitai Murabula, said that the government should revoke the act that punishes suicidal actions.
Unfortunately, Kenya is a country where our culture strongly disapproves suicide. And this cultural leaning has found its way in our laws, and it has been part of our laws. That our penal code, Section 226, makes it a criminal offense, specifically a misdemeanor for a person to attempt suicide. And so the Kenya Psychiatric Association has been urging the government, especially our parliament, to repeal Section 226 of the Penal Code so that a person who attempts suicide is not imprisoned.
Another Kenyan, Bevna Liaka, is a caregiver to a mental health patient. She says some patients give up on themselves and decide to commit suicide.
And even sometimes we try our best as caregivers and we give our all, and sometimes you wake up one day and it's happened. Your friend committed suicide and it's painful, and we've had you feel like, I really thought we were making progress, and then you wake up and they're not there anymore.
Dr. Chitai says with the pandemic, many people are suffering from mental health illnesses, and that negative social factors have contributed to the spike in suicidal cases.
We must realize that Kenya is one of those countries that tend to have negative social factors that encourage suicide. So we are talking about things like unemployment, things like chronic illnesses, and unavailability of good healthcare facilities in the country. And we're also talking about high prevalence of mental illnesses and a high treatment gap, so that nearly 85% to almost 90% of Kenyans who have mental illnesses do not get the adequate treatment.
In a global statistics, WHO says that 703,000 people take their own lives annually. The WHO also noted that poor data, lack of awareness of suicide as a public health issue, and the taboo in many societies around openly discussing suicide are obstacles to fighting the problem. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Today, September 16, is International Identity Day. It is observed as a tribute to the UN Sustainable Development Goal 16.9, which calls for identity for all individuals by 2030. To commemorate the day, the group ID for Africa is organizing a virtual live cast. A panel comprising identification experts is expected to address why inclusion appears to remain a major challenge for identity systems across Africa. Members of the panel will also come up with recommendations to address the problem. For more about the organization and the upcoming virtual live cast, VOA's Peter Clotty spoke via Skype with Dr. Joseph Atik, Executive Chairman of ID for Africa.
We, as we do every year on the day itself, we bring the community together to assess the progress that we have made and to also understand in what ways the Identity Day has served the Identity for All goal of many of the countries. So we will be holding what we call a live cast, which is an extended format webinar with participants from over 130 countries in the world, including 49 countries in Africa, who will be watching us to try to see how Identity Day this year is being celebrated, but also what progress we've made since last time we celebrated this day.
Well, Dr. Atik, why is inclusion a major problem in Africa's identification systems?
Well, inclusion is a very important objective worldwide. It happens to be a problem in Africa because 500 million people in Africa are not included, are excluded. So it becomes a problem because historically Africa has had difficulty building civil registers or even keeping national population register records in place with the periods of conflict and civil wars that had followed independence resulted in the loss of data and the state's inability to know who is who exists on their territories. And if you don't know the people on your territories, you cannot manage to offer them services or give them the rights that are due. And so inclusion in Africa is a challenge because people are invisible.
The panelists of experts are expected to propose recommendations. How does your organization plan to work with African governments specifically to implement these anticipated proposed solutions?
It's very important to make sure that people understand that our work, which is with the objective of achieving total inclusion and identity for all, is not a simple one-time effort. It's an ongoing campaign which started with us in 2014 and will continue all the way to 2030, which is the objective for the Sustainable Development Goal. This is the year where we have to make sure that everybody is included. And in order to do that, there is no one size fit all. There are many different initiatives. For example, by linking banking to identity, we're simplifying the Know Your Customer regulations. We're allowing the central banks to become registrars, to help people bring them on board into the inclusive system. Instead of saying to them, no, we don't know you, therefore we're not going to let you have a bank account, we tell them, we are going to help you get an identity and therefore a bank account.
Dr. Joseph Atik is the executive chairman of ID for Africa. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. The governments of Ghana, Vietnam, Germany, and Ecuador gathered this month to discuss a global solution to end marine litter and plastic pollution. Participants of the ministerial conference hope to gather momentum to persuade the United Nations to adopt a global mandate on the issue. Oliver Boachi, advisor to Ghana's Minister of the Environment, spoke to Ricky Stryak about how marine pollution impacts Ghanaians and the need for a global solution.
The problem of marine litter has become a global problem that no one single nation can solve. First, there is international trade that are pushing plastic packaging products from all parts of the world to all parts of the world. Because plastics have become such a big part of human life, that is going to continue. And for that reason, the menace of plastics needs to be dealt at the global level. The second thing is that because of ocean currents, as you just mentioned, the oceans may have national sovereignties, but they don't have any national boundaries. When plastic waste being dumped in these oceans, they are going everywhere and there are no boundaries that stop them from moving from one country to another. And for that reason, I think nations need to sit together and then find a way of dealing with this problem, because if we don't, it is going to overwhelm us.
What's the urgency needed? Because while obviously global frameworks and global rules are important, do you think there is an urgency to this issue? What have you seen personally with your own eyes as a resident of Ghana and how this affects people's lives?
If I was to tell you the problems that we are having with plastics in the country, you know, alone, you will probably not even ask why I think there is an agency associated with it. And remember, Ghana is only a very, very small country.
I would actually really like to hear some of those problems. Can you tell me at least one example?
Well, first of all, plastic pollution has really endangered our environment. Everywhere you turn in the country, you see plastic waste, you know, on our parks, on our roads, in our gutters, on our beaches. And it's affecting the livelihood of so many people.
That was Oliver Boachi, advisor to Ghana's Minister of the Environment. He spoke to Ricky Stryak from the capital, Accra. And that's it for this Thursday, September 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you a very good day.